All right, let's jump right in. We're taking a deep dive into the troubles in Northern Ireland, and I've got to say, the source material you sent over, it really brings a new perspective to it all. Focusing on the human side of this conflict, the culture, the identity, everyday life, it's fascinating.
It's like we're going beyond the headlines, peeling back the layers to understand how something like economics, for example, could actually intertwine with something as complex as a conflict.
Yeah, the 1973 oil crisis, that really struck a chord with me. I mean, at first glance, you wouldn't think a war in the Middle East would directly impact the streets of Belfast, but
Right, but those ripple effects, they're huge. Think about it, Northern Ireland. They relied heavily on imported energy, so when that crisis hit.
it hit hard.
Exactly.
Right.
And here's the thing, the impact, it wasn't spread evenly. Some Catholic communities, they were facing unemployment rates close to, get this, 50%.
50%. I mean,
Yay.
that's almost impossible to wrap your head around.
It's staggering, isn't it? An entire generation essentially robbed of their future. And that kind of desperation, it breeds resentment. It takes existing tensions and just throws gasoline on the fire.
So it's not necessarily that the economic woes directly caused the troubles, but more like they acted as this magnifying glass, focusing on those fault lines that were already there.
Precisely. And that leads perfectly into this whole concept of identity, which, as you know, is a central theme in a lot of what you sent over. Being Irish or British in Northern Ireland, well, it went way beyond just holding a passport, didn't it?
It seems like it was so deeply ingrained in everything.
It's hard to overstate just how deeply. Family history, religion, how you spoke, even perceptions of work ethic, it was all tied into whether someone saw themselves as Irish or British.
You even touched on how language itself became a battleground, which I found absolutely fascinating.
It's a prime example of how deeply intertwined these things became. The push to revive Gaelic, the Irish language, it was about so much more than just words. It was a symbol, a powerful statement of Irish identity, a rejection of British influence, if you will.
And on the flip side, you had some Protestants, particularly those identifying with the Ulster Scots tradition,
Yeah.
embracing their own dialect, Scots Gaelic, as a way to set themselves apart.
Exactly. It was about differentiation, about drawing those lines in the sand. Even the simple act of choosing your words became a way of making a statement. And this need to assert one's identity so strongly, well, it plays into this whole idea of a siege mentality, which was especially prevalent among the Unionist community.
Right, that sense of being under siege. It came up a lot in the material you provided.
Imagine, just for a moment, living with this constant underlying fear, this fear that your culture, your way of life is under threat, that your community is outnumbered, constantly having to defend its place.
It's a very visceral fear.
It is, and it's deeply rooted in history and events like the Siege of Derry back in 1689.
Yes, Derry's walls. When I first came across it, I thought, okay, interesting historical footnote. But the more I read, the more I realized how much it still resonated centuries later, especially during the 20th century.
It really highlights how history, especially when it's traumatic or when it involves a sense of triumph over adversity, how it can cast such a long shadow.
So tell me more about the siege.
Well, you have these 13 apprentice boys, ordinary young men, essentially, and they become heroes by doing something incredibly brave, slamming the city gate shut against the army of King James II, who was Catholic. That act of defiance, it sparked a siege that lasted 105 days, a brutal struggle that really etched itself onto the soul of the Protestant community. And it became this enduring symbol representing their unwavering resistance against what they perceived as Catholic oppression.
Wow, it's amazing to think how something that happened way back in 1689 could still hold such power centuries later.
It speaks volumes about the power of collective memory, right? How these historical narratives, especially those infused with trauma and triumph, can transcend generations. But you know what I find equally fascinating is how this period of intense turmoil gave rise to this incredibly vibrant, even defiant cultural scene. All those articles you sent about artists, writers, even punk rockers grappling with the troubles, incredible.
Right, that's what really resonated with me, the way art and culture were so intertwined with the conflict. It wasn't just about politics, it was about expressing the very real, very human cost of living in a society as divided as Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. And when you talk about capturing that human cost, you have to talk about Seamus Heaney.
Oh, absolutely, a giant of Irish literature.
His work, it wasn't just about the beauty of the Irish landscape. It was about digging into those anxieties, those fears that lay beneath the surface of everyday life.
Like in his poem, A Constable Calls. The way he captures the terror of a childhood encounter with an armed police officer, it's so visceral, you can practically feel the fear, the uncertainty.
Exactly. And then you have poems like The Tulland Man, Bogland, where he draws these incredible parallels between the violence of the present and ancient Irish myths, almost as if he's searching for meaning in this chaotic world.
Which is what art does so well, right?
Yeah.
It takes something as raw and painful as conflict and transforms it into something that helps us understand ourselves, understand the world just a little bit better.
Couldn't agree more. And it's important to remember this wasn't just happening in the world of, say, high art or literature. Even punk rock, a genre practically built on rebellion and raw emotion, it became this incredibly powerful outlet for a generation caught in the middle of the trouble.
I've got to admit, when I saw the article about Stiff Little Fingers,
mm-hmm.
I was intrigued. I mean, love punk rock, but hadn't really made that connection before. And then I listened to Alternative Ulster. Man, that raw energy, the frustration of those lyrics.
It hits you right between the eyes, doesn't it?
It does.
And what makes it so compelling is that they weren't trying to offer these simplistic solutions or political slogans. It was pure, visceral emotion. Anger, boredom, this yearning for something different. They were the voice of a generation.
And then, of course, you have Zombie by the Cranberries, a song that wasn't even from Northern Ireland, but somehow managed to become this anthem.
It's a testament to the fact that the Troubles resonated far beyond the borders of Northern Ireland. That song, it tapped into this universal sense of grief, of outrage over the sheer human cost of conflict.
It really shows how music, how art in general, can transcend language, geography, everything, to create the sense of shared empathy. But going back to culture and the conflict, it went beyond music and poetry, didn't it? Even sports got pulled into the mix.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but you're right. Something that has the power to unify, like sports, became yet another battleground for these identity politics. Look at the Gaelic Athletic Association, the GAA, for example.
Ah, the GAA, right. Uh-huh. Primarily associated with Gaelic games like hurling and Gaelic football.
Exactly. Now, those sports were, and still are, incredibly popular. But the GAA itself, well, it became the symbol of Irish nationalism and their rule prohibiting members of the Royal Ulster Constabulary, the RUC, from participating. That was seen by a lot of unionists as concrete evidence of a nationalist bias.
So even choosing which team to support, it became a way of taking sides.
It really highlights how pervasive those divisions were. Even seemingly apolitical aspects of life were imbued with this sectarian significance.
It's heavy stuff when you think about it. Like every aspect of life, from the language you spoke to the sports team you cheered for, was viewed through this lens of us versus them. It makes you wonder if there was any room for hope, for reconciliation amidst all that division.
That's the question, isn't it? And honestly, those sources you shared, they do offer these glimmers of hope, stories of courageous individuals and groups who dared to imagine a different future for Northern Ireland.
Yeah, those stories are really something. Like Lagan College, the first integrated secondary school in Northern Ireland. Just the sheer courage it must have taken to open a school like that, to bring Protestant and Catholic students together.
It was a truly radical act, a direct challenge to this segregated education system that had only reinforced divisions for far too long.
And it wasn't just about putting them in the same classrooms, was it?
Right. They went beyond that. They incorporated lessons on both Protestant and Catholic traditions, encouraging dialogue, challenging prejudices head on. They were really trying to cultivate understanding and respect.
It's incredible. And it wasn't just Lagan College. There were other efforts, like the Education for Mutual Understanding program, EMU.
Absolutely. EMU was launched in 89, another significant step towards reconciliation. And the idea behind it, having it woven into the entire school system, encouraging teachers to incorporate lessons about different cultures, different historical perspectives into their existing curriculum, it was brilliant.
It sounds so simple. But learning about each other's cultures and histories, that's huge. It chips away at those walls of fear and misunderstanding.
Exactly. And that's what makes these cross-community efforts so compelling. They represent this unwavering belief in the power of dialogue, of education, of shared experiences, to overcome division, however ingrained it might seem. They're a reminder that even in the darkest chapters, there are always those who dare to envision a brighter future.
It's like there's always hope, even in the darkest of times. People finding ways to make things better, to build something new.
And that's what's so important to remember about this whole idea of peace building. You know, it's not just about signing papers and agreeing to stop fighting. It's about tackling those deep-seated narratives, the ones that keep people divided and distrustful. It's about planting those seeds of empathy, of understanding.
And those seeds can really take root in the most surprising places. One thing that really struck me was how artists weren't just reflecting the conflict, they were challenging it, using their art to offer a totally different perspective.
Exactly. It's like, if cultural identity could be used as a weapon during the Troubles, then it could also be this powerful tool for peace. Think about it. Listening to a song, watching a play, even something as simple as cheering for your team.
Yeah, those shared experiences can be really powerful.
They can help us look past our differences, connect on a human level.
Like we were talking about with Zombie, right? The Cranberries weren't even from Northern Ireland, but their music, it resonated with people all over the world who wanted to see an end to the violence.
It shows you the potential of art, of music, of storytelling, building bridges where there used to be walls, helping us see the humanity in people we might otherwise see as the other.
It's about recognizing that shared humanity without erasing what makes us unique, those individual experiences and identities. And it makes me think, you know, we've covered so much ground here, the economic factors, the history, the cultural side of it all. What does it all mean for us today, looking back on this turbulent period from the outside?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's easy to think of the Troubles as this distant conflict, something confined to history books. But the lessons we can learn from that period, about identity, about the dangers of division, the importance of empathy, those are timeless.
They are.
They remind us that peace isn't some passive thing that just happens, you know? It's something we have to actively choose every single day. Challenging our own biases, having those tough conversations, and looking for common ground, even when it seems impossible.
It's a continuous effort.
Absolutely. And those are lessons that apply far beyond Northern Ireland, wouldn't you say?
100%.
So as you reflect on what we've talked about today, think about this. How can you apply these lessons to your own life? How can you be a bridge builder in a world that often feels more and more divided?
It's a powerful question. And one we should all be asking ourselves. And on that note, we'll leave you to keep exploring the complexities of the Troubles, hopefully with some new perspectives and a deeper understanding of this really tumultuous chapter in history. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.